Now that we have got to our bloggers roundtable, some of the hot topics folks are talking about online are fashion accessories. A little too big to put in a handbag, but certainly not too big to carry one. We are talking about Black people. Black people are this year's most fashionable holiday accessory. And should Jesse Jackson Jr. bow out of contention for the Senate seat in Illinois? With us today to discuss Black folks reviled and uplifted, we've got self-described vigilante pundit Baratunde Thurston. He writes for Jack and Jill Politics under the pseudonym Jack Turner. He also blogs for sites including the Huffington Post. Arlene Fenton runs the blog Black Women Vote. Her new blog is Black Women's Network. It's going to be up next month. And pop culture and urban living writer James Burnett of the Miami Herald has a blog called Burnetticut. Hi, everybody.
Hey, hello.
Hey, Brian.
So let's talk about Black people as the bestest holiday accessory, Gawker, which I admit is one of my it's one of my awful pleasures. A tipster inside a New York PR firm said that clients are demanding more, quote, worthy Black folks be added to guest list for their upscale holiday parties. Barack Obama's election makes Black people just that much cooler, and they actually did go through a list of socialites and you know, tastemakers like artist Kehinde Wiley that they thought would make good gift basket or gift list accessories. I mean, James, you've been blogging about this. What do you think?
Man, Farai, I was not sure how to react to this at first. My first reaction actually was, why am I not on one of these lists? And then when I saw that it was socialites, I pretty much understood that right away. But the most fascinating thing about this to me is the reaction from some of my readers. They immediately politicized this and made this an issue of, you know, the election of a Democrat means that liberal elitists, in their words, in some of my readers' words, are going to come out of the closet and start embracing Black people in a way that they've only pretended to in the past, which completely baffled me.
I mean, do you guys take this, Arlene, do you take it seriously or do you take it as a snarky joke or both?
I'm not taking it seriously. I think I'd wait to see who's really showing up at these parties. I mean, these types of events have never been anything I've been interested in. But even if I was, I would be more offended if Black people were kept out rather than being invited for the wrong reasons. Most of the times in those events, everyone is extremely shallow anyway. Even the white people who are invited for the wrong reasons. So, I mean, why should we be any different when it comes to that?
Baratunde, is it the wrong reason, though? I mean, having lived in New York for many years and being much more connected to how money moves in New York than I am in Los Angeles now, you can see, okay, you create a guest list that has these people, you publicize the guest list, then you get the paying customers to come. Like, New Year's Eve parties are just the biggest ripoff. You know, you get one celebrity to scoot through and do a midnight toast, you pay them $250,000, everybody else pays $100 at the door. I mean, is it really silly to think of this kind of strategic guest listing?
Well, that's why I don't plan to be in New York for New Year's Eve. I think it shows a really outdated mode from this publicist community now that they're just catching on that Black people are cool. Black people have been cool since we got here, and it's taken them a couple of centuries to catch up on that fact. The one thing that really stood out to me, though, was this idea, this photo op kind of idea that, oh, if we just have Black faces, reminded me of Bush's reelection when he had all these pictures on his website. They were all with him and Black people that he's never really connected with as well before. And I just have a warning to those socialites. Like, what happened shortly after those photos is we had Katrina come up and you kind of saw the real color. So this whole fashion industry thing next year might be completely gone. You'll find yourselves in a lot of outdated clothes.
All right. James, are you going to try to move up the ladder this year while Black people have an open window into the world of high finance and fashion?
It all depends on what sort of free food and drink are being offered at these parties. But no, seriously.
If there's scramps, you're on. If there's no scramps, you're not showing up.
No scramps, then I'm not even going to consider it.
There is a problem with Black people as physical objects and accessories, which, I don't know, just something in my genetic profile objects to that sort of objectification.
All right.
I do agree with that. It's a huge expansion on the I have a Black friend thing.
All right, guys. Well, this is a perfect place to take our first break, because now that we know our worth, we can meditate about it over the break. We're going to have more of you guys coming up next. Plus, Christmas budgets are tighter these days, so how to let the little ones down easy. We've got our favorite emotional genius, Judge Lynn Toler, sharing her wisdom. I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. We're back with our bloggers roundtable. With us, we've got Arlene Fenton, who runs the blog Black Women Vote, pop culture and urban living writer James Burnett of the Miami Herald. His blog is Burnetticut, and self-described vigilante pundit Baratunde Thurston. He blogs for sites including The Huffington Post. So I want to go ahead and talk about the Blagojevich Obama seat, Jesse Jackson Jr. situation. U.S. Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. has been put in the spotlight. He acknowledges that he is the so-called candidate number five, but that is counter to some reports that he did not offer cash or favors for the Senate seat. There's no evidence that he offered to grease Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich's palm in return for the seat, but there's a continuing probe into the allegations. And it's obviously taking a huge toll on everyone watching this. In a recent interview, CNN's Don Lemon said to Jackson outright, "Your name is being dragged through the mud." Jackson's response was emotional.
"I've got a great name given to me by great parents, and I've got a great father who has a great legacy of public service. And I named my son Jesse. So I'm fighting now for my character, mm-hmm. and I'm also fighting for my life. And I'm fighting for them, and I'm fighting for them, and I'm fighting for them. This is about my children being able to Google their name in 5 years, and there'd be nothing there associated with it that suggests anything wrong."
Baratunde, those mm-hmms are coming from his wife, who was also present at the interview. What comes up for you when you hear that?
Well, first of all, anyone's going to lose the Google battle. If he's ever picked his nose, that's going to be on YouTube somewhere. So he can't run on that sort of defense. I'm taken back to a moment at the DNC where I saw Biz Markie performing, and he said, "If you don't want drama, vote Obama." And unfortunately, the shenanigans of the Illinois governor have really added a layer of drama to the votes needed in the Senate, to the governance of that state, and to an edge of the Obama administration as pushed by a lot of his conservative critics. So far, Jackson Jr., we've got evidence that he's actually been cooperating with the prosecutors on another but somewhat related case, and there's nothing that seems to tie him directly, but it muddies the waters for an already sort of edge case for him to be able to be that senator in the first place. It's not pretty, and I hope he escapes all right. There's a lot of love for him, at least among our readers.
James, there's a totally different angle that someone brought up to me today that I'd never thought of before, is that some people might say, well, if he's cooperating with authorities, you know, who knows if he's an informant? You know, people get, there are 12 million layers of paranoia in this world. Probably, you know, 2 or 3 million are justified, but still, right. Some people have this other idea that you should never talk to the government, ever. You know, even if you're in the government. Do you think that's going to come up?
You know, it already has a little. He made the distinction, I believe, yesterday that he had been an informer, but he was not a formal informant. So it's already obviously causing him a bit of nerves. And I can't say that I blame him. The shame of it is, if I could make an analogy, it's like the school children who don't want to brag about being smart. The fact that he may have cooperated with the government, some people are going to hold that against him. So I don't blame him for being a little nervous about how that's parsed in the media.
Arlene, what should we take away from this as it pertains to the era we face ahead? You know, for example, this did not start, this investigation did not start in the age of Obama, but it is part of the dawning of the age of Obama. How much is there going to be a reckoning and an accounting for politics as usual during the first, say, 100 days of this new presidency?
I think we're going to see a lot of it because people are in pain. We're in an economic crisis. We all want someone to blame. And I think that if there is a time to keep your nose clean, this is the time. Going back to Jesse Jackson Jr., I think if he's innocent, he absolutely must defend his name. And I'm actually surprised that some people would call for him to kind of skulk off into the darkness. I think we need more people of integrity to be at the forefront. But if there is any hint of impropriety, maybe he really should try to quiet it down a bit. But I'm just not getting that feeling from him.
One of our commenters on Jack and Jill Politics, BTX, proposed it, which I think is the best solution, which is governor steps aside, somebody appoints the Iraqi shoe-throwing journalist to the Senate seat. He's clearly shown a penchant for standing up to President Bush, which I think is a qualification enough.
All right. Well, speaking of journalists with beef, in this case, we're talking about bloggers and sadly, some who have found themselves behind bars. There's a recent report by the Committee to Protect Journalists. It found that more bloggers are in jail today worldwide than journalists from what people call the mainstream media. A majority of arrests were made in China, Cuba, Burma, Eritrea, Uzbekistan as the top five. And so we're not talking by and large about, U.S. journalists who we very often are protected compared to journalists around the world. But there is a sense that bloggers are taking risks by putting out information. And that is what journalists do, is put out information. Baratunde, does this show that blogging is both journalism and also that it is something where we need a structure to champion people who are taking risks?
Yes and yes. And the idea that, the way they categorize these journalists / bloggers / online media proponents is increasingly less relevant. It's like calling someone a print journalist in 1820. At least that's the era we're approaching. What I found most disturbing as I looked through some of the layers of the report were the spike in arrest really happened after September 11th. And I think a lot of these governments around the world, the more repressive ones, were emboldened by America's own response, pushing rules aside, declaring an endless global war on terror, which kind of diminished the role of constitutions or rights, human rights of any sort. So that was a bit troubling that, another consequence and collateral damage of our effort to defend our freedoms was to, in fact, clamp down on the freedom of the press, which is a core part of that around the world.
Do you ever think, Arlene, that we in the states who blog are not only less protected, but perhaps in some ways less serious about what we do? I mean, not that there aren't fun blogs everywhere, but that people have not reached the point where blogging is a high-risk occupation, the way investigative journalism can be. And should people take more risks?
I definitely think they should take more risks. There was a point in my when I first began blogging where I had to decide whether or not I was going to give my real name, because many bloggers are able to hide behind a cloak of anonymity. And I think that is a great protection, but it also does begin to limit you in how many spheres that you can spread your message. So I think that the more bloggers who kind of come out from behind that computer and begin to speak out for those who can't speak for themselves, the more targeted they're going to be. I think I've met quite a few bloggers in the last year, and they are very serious about what they do. I think every bit as serious as what we consider a traditional journalist. And I really think that we're going to see a little more respect, for lack of a better word, in the U.S.
All right, well,
of blogging.
Mm-hmm. We have to end it there. Always great to have the three of you with us. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
We've been speaking with Arlene Fenton from the blog Black Women Vote. Her new blog is called Black Women's Network and is going to be up next month. She was at Audio Post Studios in Philadelphia. Baratunde Thurston blogs at the Huffington Post and Jack and Jill Politics. He was at our NPR New York studios. And pop culture and urban living writer James Burnett of the Miami Herald blogs at Burnetticut. He was at member station WLRN in Miami. You can find links to their blogs and ours at nprnewsandnotes.org. And the conversation doesn't stop here. Our online series, Speak Your Mind, gives you a chance to sound off on the issues you care about. To find out how, go to our blog, nprnewsandviews.org, and click on Speak Your Mind.